We're going to talk tonight, this evening, it's still light outside, it's not tonight yet, about the ideas of the Olivet Vase and the Book of Echa. We tend to look at the Book of Echa as a, in English, called the Book of Lamentations. So on Purim, we read the Book of Esther. On Shavuos, we read the Book of Ruth, of Rus, and on Sukkot, the Book of Kohelas, Pesach, Shir, Shirim. And Tisha B'Av has its book, its Megillah, the Megillah's Echa. The book or the scroll of Echa, and seemingly it's just related to called the holiday of Tisha B'Av, the events of the day that ties in the lamentations, the mourning of the tragedies that took place at that time, and that seems to be about it. Yet, if you look at all the chapters, with the exception of the final chapter of the Book of Echa, so all of them go in order of the Olivet Vase. You will notice that. They all have 22 psukim, with the exception of the third chapter that has a whopping 66 psukim. But for all you mathematicians out there, you know that 66 psukim is divisible by 3. And in fact, it goes in groups of 3. You have 3 verses for each of the letters of the alphabet. So, and even the last chapter, which does not go in the order of the alphabet, also has 22 verses. So also cognate with 22 with the letters of the Aleph. So the truth is that the Gemara already notes this interesting phenomenon. And the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, it says, Amar Rabba Amar B'Yechanan, Rabba Sanhedrin B'Yechanan, Mibnei Ma'alaku B'Aleph Beis. Why were the Jewish people smitten or hit, punished with the Aleph Beis? Nisha Avru Al HaTayra Shemitnu B'Aleph Beis. Because they transgressed the Torah that was given with the Aleph. Okay? Everyone's happy with that? Everyone on the Zoom here is happy? Everyone here in the room is happy? Yeah, that's good? Okay, we'll just stop here. We'll go home. Have a great Tisha B'Av. So, let's stop and think about this for a minute. So first, Rashi explains, Rashi says, as we just said, what does this mean? They were hit or punished with the Aleph. What does that mean, says Rashi? Megillah Echa, the Book of Echa, is written in the order of Aleph. Okay? Now, one sec. Let's think about this now for a minute. Let's make some problems that we don't have to go home prematurely tonight. Number one, the Book of Echa is written with Aleph Beis. What does that have to do with punishment coming through Aleph Beis? Did like letters fall from heaven upon the Jewish people and hit them on the head that they are punished, smitten, hit with the Aleph Beis? In what way is the fact that the Book of Echa is written with Aleph Beis a reflection that they were hit with Aleph Beis? If you want to wonder why the Book of Echa is written in the order of the Aleph Beis, what the Gemara should say is, why is the Book of Echa written in the order of the Aleph Beis? Because the Jewish people transgressed the Aleph Beis. But where is there an indication that they are punished with the Aleph Beis because the Book of Echa is written in the order of the Aleph Beis? That's question number one. Question number two is the Gemara statement itself. Why were they, the answer I should say, why are they punished? Because they transgressed the Torah that was given with the Aleph Beis. Well, yes, the Torah was given with the Aleph Beis. With what then should it have been given with? Musical notations? Hieroglyphics? What exactly was the Torah supposed to be given with besides Aleph Beis? Of course it was given with Aleph Beis. That's how you communicate with letters. So, the Torah was given with Aleph Beis because that's how you communicate with letters that form words and so on. So why is that like notable? Why is that a notable piece of information? That's an important reason why they are punished, because it's given with Aleph Beis. Well, yes, that's how words are given. You form words and thoughts with, when you communicate and you write, you do it with letters. And third of all, why is this unique? Any time a person transgresses, any Aveira, one is transgressing the Torah that is given with Aleph Beis. Why is this specific to this? What's going on over here? That why is the destruction of the temple because they transgressed the Torah? Because they're going to be Aleph Beis. Any transgression anyone ever does is a transgression of, by definition, if it's a transgression, what is it a transgression of? Torah law. So every single punishment ever should be through the Aleph Beis because that's you transgress the Torah that's given with Aleph Beis. Why is this unique? That suddenly over here, when it came to the Churban, to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so they transgressed the Torah that was given with Aleph Beis, and therefore they're punished with Aleph Beis. Every transgression in history of the world, well, at least from the giving of the Torah onwards, is a transgression of the Torah. Always. So why is this unique? Now you could say, well, you're right. This was the granddaddy of them all, because this was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This was the culmination of all the transgressions. But still, like, that's maybe what makes it unique. But again, every transgression is a transgression of the letters of the Torah, and yet somehow it is brought out specifically in this context. So those are the questions that have to be asked on this passage. So again, what I'm discussing, that even these questions actually are, I am going to attempt to give over some thoughts from the great Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal, the great Jewish thinker, and who passed away several years ago, and who had such an influence on, you know, Jewish hashkafa thought and so on for our generation. And I'm apologizing if I don't fully give over. I'm like taking bits and pieces from a few different pieces that are written over from him and putting it together to discuss. But he's focusing on this question in two different pieces, and I'm going to share some of his thoughts and ideas on this subject. And I think that it will be very enlightening for all of us to understand what is going on over here and what it means practically in our world for this Tisha B'Av and for our lives. So we have an idea, which a lot of you have probably heard. It really starts from a Gemara. The Gemara says that Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. Asar ma'amores, nivra olam. Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. And if you go through the 6 days of creation, the Torah says nine times, Vayomer Hashem, and God said, or Vayomer Elokim, one of those two. Vayomer, Hashem said nine times. The Gemara says it's only nine. It says you're right. The word Bereishis in the beginning, that's the very first. That is the beginning of everything, time, space, existence. That is the beginning, and so that is the first of the 10 utterances is Bereishis. So there are 10 utterances that bring the world into existence. What is this idea of 10 utterances? Hashem creates the world with 10 utterances. 10, that word utterance is such an utterly annoying word to say. 10 statements. Asara Mamaris. Someone didn't like my joke and unmuted themselves for that. Okay, I'm just going to mute everyone. If someone has a question on Zoom, you can feel free to unmute yourself. Okay, I just want to mute everyone so we avoid background noise of all shapes and sizes. The world was created with 10 statements, 10 utterances. And the idea is this. That is that everything in the world is comprised of letters, if you will. The spiritual underpinning of everything in the world are the letters of the alphabet. And the different combinations of the letters of the alphabet are what make up everything in the world. Now you're going to say, Rabbi Fleischer, come on. I don't see letters making up everything in the world. Well, I will pray tell. When's the last time you looked at anything in the world and saw atoms making up? And by the way, that's why you should never trust an atom, because they make up everything. But but the fact of the matter is that atoms make up everything. They consist. And the combinations of those atoms is what in the physical world is how everything is made up. So if you're a good chemist, you can look at anything in the world, figure out its chemical makeup, and tell me exactly the building blocks of this table, metal, fall wood, plastic, you know, what my jacket is made out of, if it's wool or something else, you know, and so on and so forth. The bricks, the trees, the leaves, everything is made up of atoms. I don't see atoms. Of course, you don't see atoms. You see a tree, you see, because you're looking at a bigger picture. In a similar sense, spiritually, everything in the world is built upon the foundation of letters and the combinations of those letters. Okay? And so when we talk about Hashem creating the world with 10, with Asar Mamores, with 10 statements, what we are saying is that the 22 letters and all the different combinations thereof are the building blocks of all of creation. And if you do mathematically, much like you understand that there are a certain number of different elements on the periodic table, although they keep trying to invent more and more by spending zillions of dollars to smash atoms together to make even more complex, unstable elements. They seem to like to spend a lot of money creating a lot of unstable things in the world today. But the fact of the matter is you have a limited number of elements in the world. Okay, however there are, let's say circa 100 that are relatively common in the world. And yet you have millions upon billions of different entities that exist in the world. And all of them consist of those 100 different atoms, and that's it. And how they combine and how they interact and different chemical makeups. And the same thing is with letters. You can have millions upon millions of different combinations that make up everything based on the different combinations of those letters. There's a work you may have heard of called Sefer Yetzirah. Have you heard of Sefer Yetzirah? Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation. Okay. According to Chazal, it was written by none other than Avraham Avinu. And Sefer Yetzirah tells you how to combine letters to create things. So if you use Sefer Yetzirah, the Gemara actually talks about Amayroyim, sages of the Talmud, who actually knew how to combine the letters and actually created stuff. So it's not unlike if I need water, I don't have to go down to a stream. I could just take two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom and chemically combine them, and lo and behold, I have water. That'll solve a lot of problems. All you have to do is just get enough hydrogen, enough oxygen, and all our water problems will be solved. No problem. I don't know why they didn't think of this to solve all the drought problems everywhere. But all that talk made me thirsty for some reason. So and so here we have a cup of water, and this cup of water is lots of hydrogen atoms and half that amount of oxygen atoms, whatever other stuff is in the water. But there are also letters that are making up this water, and that's what everything consists of. Now, when we approach the world, we need to interact, engage the world in a way that ensures that we are keeping those letters in the proper order. Okay, so if we'll take it back to the example of the atoms, if I figure out how to mess around with atoms inside of something, I can wreak a lot of havoc. In fact, there's probably a lot of science fiction stuff about the villain figuring out how to make some ray gun that re-scrambles the atoms and, you know, makes everyone melt or turn into, I don't know, statues or dinosaurs or whatever, or a glass of water, whatever it is, by rearranging the atoms. You want to take it in a different direction? It may be practical that does happen. DNA, right? All of us consist of DNA. We are built on our DNA. The DNA is the code that makes us up, right? If God forbid, just one little molecule of those four different molecules on the DNA strands gets scrambled, you're looking at a big mess because it's out of order. It needs to follow that order for everything to remain in the proper fashion and sense, in order for everything to be maintained and to function properly and not to just go haywire, right? So in the world at large, the same thing is true. The spiritual underpinning of the world, the letters that make up the world, we need to interact with them. We need to approach them. We need to interact with the world and use the world and utilize and live within the world in such a way that we make sure we keep those letters ordered in the proper direction. Well, how do I do that? How do I make sure that when I approach the world, I'm not inadvertently scrambling those letters, the alphabets, and messing things up? Well, we have to look to a book that has lots of letters in it. Guess which book has a lot of letters? Torah, the Torah. Now, you can say, well, Rabbi Fleischer, there are many books with lots of letters by definition. A book is something that has, that's a picture book. Books have lots of letters in them. Any book has lots of letters. You're right. But which book is the book that has the letters in the right order? Which book is the book that's going to tell me how the letters of the world should be ordered? How do I make sure not to scramble, if you will, the DNA strand? DNA is better than atoms, just for our purposes of discussion, in terms of analogy. How do we make sure that the DNA organization of the world stays in its proper format and doesn't get scrambled and doesn't get turned upside down on its head? Shem gave us the Torah. Now, let's take this idea a step further. I'll prove it to you. We have an idea. Istakel b'raisa b'ra'alma. Hashem looked into the Torah, created the world. In other words, Hashem looked into the letters of the Torah, and through those letters of the Torah, the Torah is, in essence, the DNA of the world. It's the blueprint of the world. It's the letters of the Torah that make up the world. And that is how Avram created a Sefer HaYetzirah. Because Avram, as we've talked in other classes in the past, reverse engineered and created the Torah. As Rav Moshe Shapiro is quoted as having said, we say, Chazal say that Hashem istakel b'raisu b'ra'alma. Hashem looked in the Torah and he created the world. And Avram Avinu istakel ba'alma u'bara'iraisa. Avram looked at the world and created the Torah. He He reverse engineered. Avram looked at the DNA code of the world. He saw how the letters were arranged, and he was able to figure out the Torah by looking at how that Torah was expressed in physical form. If you take a very extremely talented geneticist, can look at a human and tell you what that human's DNA is by the color of the eyes, the height, this, that. You know, a extremely talented and, let's just say, all-knowing geneticist who knows every single characteristic of the person, that would be borne out by the DNA. And if every single trait, characteristic of that person is borne out by the DNA, the geneticist can work backwards and tell you what the person's DNA will be, right? Today, scientists look at DNA and they tell you, to a certain degree, you know, what color eyes, they're already messing around with, you know, all these moral questions already there. You know, you want to have a boy or girl, blue eyes, brown eyes, tall, short, fat, skinny, brilliant, not so brilliant, you know, like, what do they call them? Custom-made children, right? On the horizon, give it a few more years. Once Elon Musk gets bored of SpaceX, so we'll move on to that. So, and Tesla. So, I don't know how fast we'll get bored of Tesla. But, anyways, so, by looking at the world, Avraham Avinu writes the Sefer Yetzirah. He writes this book. Avraham Avinu is the expert in awareness of those letters, of being able to manufacture or to figure out what the letters are based on looking at the world itself. That's Avraham Avinu. We can't do that. We look in the Torah and we figure out how to do things. What happens when we don't follow the Torah? What happens when we don't follow the Torah? What happens when we don't follow the Torah is order gets, when we fail to follow the Torah, what we're doing is we are not tapping into the proper order of the letters in the world. When we decide, when we look at the Torah and say, you know, Torah says, this is the order, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, whatever. And I go in and I say, you know, I think it should be Tes, Ches, Zayin, Hey, Beis, Vav, Tav, Lamed, whatever. Okay? So what I'm, by ignoring the Torah, by saying, I know better, by going ahead and making my own order of things, I am creating a reality of rearranging the letters in a way that is not the way the Torah is ordered, and by extension, not the way the world is meant to be ordered. That is essentially what's happening. Okay. Now, let's take this idea a step further. Okay. When the Jewish people reached a point, when they reached the point of failing to live up to the Torah, of not keeping the Torah to such an extent that they created, if you will, a new world order of their own making. Okay, and Hashem said it got to a point where the world is just, you know, you have failed to fulfill the Torah to the extent that you've created a new world order, so to speak, a new arrangement of letters. You have gone ahead and successfully, if you will, scramble the letters of the world. You have created a new reality in which you exist, where the letters are scrambled in different order. That is when things fall apart. That is when literally things get turned upside down, topsy-turvy. You took tough and put it in the aleph by the top, whatever it is. Now, obviously, no one's walking around like taking letters and messing them up. But the point being that by me ignoring the lettering of the Torah and creating my own order, I am essentially messing up that order. It's not unlike, again, going back to the DNA analogy, where certain chemicals that people ingest or are exposed to can be carcinogenic and could create cancerous, mutant, messed up cells, or radiation can totally mess around with a person's DNA, or in an embryo, a mother taking certain things can ruin the child's DNA and cells and genetic material and so on and so forth. Okay, I wasn't trying to mess up the DNA, that's right, but you had too much red 17 and yellow whatever, and that's the effect it has. And while that may not have been your intent, you were just eating 18 boxes of jelly beans in one sitting, but that's the effect that has ultimately on things. When you don't follow the rules to keep things in order, when you try to do what you want that's not in the rule book, what ends up happening is that you can reorder things, and reordering things messes things up royally. So says Rav Moshe Shapira that when the time for the Churban, for the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, came around, what essentially had happened was the Jewish people had reached a point where they had created a new reality with their order of things. And when that became a reality, that Hashem said, this is the world you've created, and you failed to fix that, you failed to do the teshuva, to return from that, That's it. Everything falls apart. You've created a new world order. Now live with that new world order. Okay? And so when the Gemara says, we'll expand on this idea, but just let's take it at a basic level right now. When we talk about an idea that the Gemara says, why are the Jewish people punished, smitten, hit with the letters of the alphabet? Because they transgressed the letters of the alphabet of the Torah. All our questions are answered now. It's not just like some figurative idea, some figure of speech or whatever it is. What the Gemara is saying is that the Jewish people didn't just suffer cataclysmic catastrophes and tragedies and destruction, but rather what happened and what has happened to the Jewish people historically, especially on Tisha B'Av, is there's a world order of the Jewish world falling apart. And Rav Moshe Shapiro explains this very with tragic beauty. He points out, he says, Jewish suffering throughout the ages has not been random acts of violence. It's been systematic persecution of the Jewish people throughout history. There's been plenty of random acts of violence also, don't get me wrong, but systematic. We don't have to go any further back than the Holocaust to see just how systematic anti-Semitism and how ingrained in law and order, in the rule books, to create an entire system of rules, of efficiency, of systems, of laws, of persecuting the Jewish people. The Gemara's question, says Rabbi Shapiro, is not why are they, why is the book of Eichin order of Aleph Beis? Why are they hit with the Aleph? Why are they smitten with the Aleph Beis? The idea of being hit with the Aleph Beis, of being punished with the Aleph Beis, means the Aleph Beis represents order, systems, the organization of the world, how the world is set up. And what the Gemara is asking, says Rabbi Shapiro, is, why are the Jewish people persecuted in such a systematic fashion that it's part of the laws of the nation? You see it in the Purim story. It's not just like Haman says, we're going to go out and kill everyone. We're going to pass a law that on the 13th day of Adar, all the Jewish people will be wiped out. Right? In Germany, we're going to pass a law that all the Jewish people have to be persecuted and thrown out and killed and imprisoned with systems, with roll calls, with everything, rules, regulations. Throughout history, in Tsarist Russia, there will be rules and regulations for the Jews to suffer throughout history. In Spain, there's a law. All the Jewish people will be thrown out. Now, it's not to say other nations or religions haven't had that occasionally, okay? And other nations have suffered genocide and suffering and persecution. But no nation on the face of the earth has historically, throughout history, suffered in the amount of systematic, institutionalized levels of persecution and suffering anywhere close to that reality of the Jewish people. Why, says the Gemara, asking this question some 1,500 years ago, hasn't gotten much, and we've had plenty since then. Why the systematic persecution? Why this Aleph Beis? Why these letters being arranged to create a system of persecution? Says the Gemara, now why? Because they took the letters of the Torah, they took the system that they were supposed to be a part of, and they traded it for a different system. They traded for a different system, for a different organization. And when they do that, then they are the very same system that they rejected comes back and bites them with a different, and they try to trade a system of Torah for a different system, a different systematic, organized approach to whatever it is. We don't have to, again, look very far back for all the different movements that Jews have been at the forefront, continue to be at the forefront of, okay? Systems and movements that Jews have tried to create throughout history, especially, over the last, leading up to the Holocaust, all the different movements that Jews were at the forefront of that came back to bite them. And because you traded the system of Aleph Beis of the Torah, which is the real system, the true order of things, and you rejected that, you threw away that system and you wanted to create a different system. So now you will get a system that will persecute and that will destroy your world. Okay. And so that is, says Rav Moshe Shapiro, that is the depth of the Gemara's question over here. That is the depth of the Gemara's question. We're not done yet. That's step one. You just look like you're in shock. Right? That's a powerful thought. It's a very powerful thought. We don't usually think in these terms of like Aleph Beis, right? But when you take Aleph Beis means the organized system of how things are supposed to work, so then it takes on a whole different meaning. Not just like this very ethereal, vague idea of like letters flying around. Now, let's take this a step further. And again, in the tragic beauty of this process and this system, we're not done yet. So, what does that have to do, what does that have to do with the Book of Eicha? The Book of Eicha is an order of the Aleph Beis. Why? So, Gemara says that the Book of Eicha is in the order of the Aleph Beis. As Rashi explains, why are they hit? Why are they punished with the Aleph Beis? Says Rashi, that means the Book of Eicha. What does the Book of Eicha have to do with the punishment? Says Rosh Shapiro, the Book of Eicha is not just a description of the Jewish people's suffering. The Book of Eicha is the system of suffering of the Jewish people throughout history. The Book of Eicha is that system of the Jewish people's suffering. We read the Book of Eicha on Tisha B'Av, not just to tell us the tragedies of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We read the Book of Eicha because a whole year round we read the Torah. Right? Three times a week. We live the Torah. We study the Torah. That is the system by which we live. So we lock into that system. We put ourselves into that system. We hopefully bring that system into ourselves. More about that soon. Right? But on Tisha B'Av is the day marking when the Jewish people got to that point of bucking that system. And in exchange, Hashem says, okay, you don't want the system of Torah. You will get a different system, systemized persecution. And the book that reflects that system of broken down Aleph Beis, of a rearranged Aleph Beis, is the Book of Eicha. So it's an order of Aleph Beis. Now, one second. I just said something that makes absolutely no sense. Why? Why does it make absolutely no sense?
Because it's in the order.
It's an order. Excellent. Very good. It's an order. It is an order. So everything's perfect. Everything is in order, right? No, it is not. Because there's another part to that Gemara that I haven't shared with you yet, which is very sneaky of me. But I have to give a dramatic share, so I have to say, I have to keep that ace up my sleeve. So the ace up my sleeve, not that I know how to play card games in the slightest, is that the Gemara continues and says, if you look in the book, if you look in Eicha, everything's in order of the Aleph Beis except for two letters are out of order. The letter Pei and the letter Ayin are reversed. Ayin comes before Pei. The Gemara says, why does the ayin come before the pay? Why does the pay come before the ayin? Normally, ayin comes before pay. And in Eicha, the pay precedes the ayin. Says the Gemara, because Tisha B'Av started with the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. The sin of the spies, they put the pay, the mouth, before the ayin or the eye. Okay? Now, on a very basic level, based on our discussion, what that means is, there is your rearrangement. There is your rearrangement. But listen to how wonderfully Rabbi Shapiro presents this idea and how he develops the idea. What does it mean they put the mouth before the eye? What it means is as follows. If a person looks at something absolutely objectively in the world, they call it the scientific method, even though more often than not, they're putting their pen before their eye, and as you'll see in a minute. Okay? Scientific method, let's just say, when you analyze something, you want to figure out what's going on over here. What am I looking at? What am I beholding? What you do is you look at it objectively. You assess it, you process it, you conclude, and then you express, this is what I have. Okay? When someone is subjectively analyzing something, let us suppose that the National Sugar Corporation of America sponsors a study on the effects of sugar on children, and they conclude that there are wonderful effects on the children, which they've done. They have these studies. And it's like, sugar is great for kids. Who sponsored the study? The National Sugar Board. Oh, okay. So what they do is, they put their peh for the ayin. The peh, the mouth, is my expression of what's inside outward. It's the bottom line. I process something in my mind. I go through the whole thing. And then here's my conclusion. If my peh goes before my ayin, what that means is I'm first telling you what I want, and then I'll analyze it afterwards. Okay? That is essentially what is happening. The peh parallels, the mouth parallels the heart, and the heart is the point of struggle. Gemara says that the Yetzer Hara sits atop the heart, the openings of the heart. And there's an idea, it's not my discussion tonight, but there's an idea of three levels of the person. There's melech, moach, mind, lamed, lev, chaf is kaved, which is the liver, which is the lower animalistic, you know, lower part of the person. Rav Moshe Shapiro again talks about this at length. And so when they're in the right order, it's melech, king. The moach, the mind, tells the lev what to do. And then once you make the decision, the lower part carries it out. When it's the wrong way, it's kalem, which means destroy them. Tosfos says, what curse could Bilam have possibly invoked upon the Jewish people in that millisecond of God's anger? He could have said, kalem, destroy them. Tejer Moshe Shapiro, kalem is not just destruction. It is the reversal. of everything. It is the kaved, the liver, the lower part of the person, directing the heart, the point of decision, and then that affects your mindset. That affects that. That becomes your frame of mind, and you will insist that you are correct, right? But the pet, the mouth, comes before the ayin. What that means is my agenda is already here, and now I'll analyze things to back up my agenda. So Torah is nasav in a world of nasav and ishma. In the world of nasav and ishma, now maybe you see what direction we're going in as we now come back to Matan Torah. We're going to get to Adam tonight, but nasav and ishma, which we started talking about last week, we will get back to tonight. And that is nasav and ishma is we will do it. And then we'll analyze it. Then we'll figure it out. But first, we're going to do it. In other words, Hashem, you just tell us what to do. We're going to do it. It is the absolute objective acceptance. Torah is truth. We'll study it. We'll figure it out. We'll analyze it. But there's no agenda. There's no me. Right? And when the Meraglim went into Eretz Yisrael, had the Ayin gone first, they would have seen what Yeshua and Kalev saw. Right? A Eretz Tova Ma'od Ma'od, a very good land. But they went in with an agenda. What that agenda was is not our discussion tonight. I'm sure you've heard lots about what the agenda of the Meraglim was or wasn't. Might have been. Okay, all the different approaches to their approach to Eretz Yisrael. And they put their agenda first. They put their pet before the ayin. That is the reordering. That is the reordering of the alphabets. It's the reordering of the alphabets of putting the pet, my agenda, myself, my interests, before the ayin, before the analysis. You know where this and so that is the reordering of the letters. That is the world the Jewish people created in rejecting the Torah, embracing the Torah. The true nasav and ishma is ayin first. Let's analyze it objectively. Let's look at it objectively without any ego or self, and then let's express what we need to do. And that is embracing of Torah. Rejection of Torah is this doesn't work, this doesn't make sense, we can be leaning here. It's putting my agenda first and then making that the reality that I see. That is the reordering. And so the book of Eicha is the letters of the alphabet are there, but one little switch over there. The agenda precedes ayin. And says Ramon Shapiro, you know what reality that creates in the world? Well, have you ever heard of a systemized approach of anti-Semitism in the world that does not have very logical backing to it? It always does. Nazi Germany had an entire book devoted to explaining why the Jews should be destroyed. In Spain, an entire book. In Russia, an entire book. All the trends. It's not just like, why are you killing me? Well, because I'm bored and violent. No. Even today, they will explain to you in great, vivid detail with absolute logic and a systemized approach, very scientific, about why we should persecute or worse the Jews, the Jewish people, because they lay out their agenda and they follow up on it. Random acts of violence, you know, are generally just that. They're random. Why'd you do it? Oh, I was bored. I got mad. I lost my temper. Okay, but why is there a system in place to persecute the Jewish people throughout history? Well, let me tell you. Let me tell you, we're going to have conferences. We're going to have books written about the subject. Entire newspapers devoted to the subject. Everything. It's systemized. It's explained. It's logical. It's ordered. It's olive bays. It's the olive bays of everything. With one little switch. Our agenda comes first. And so because the Jewish people put that pet for the ayin, therefore we are left with a world in which the peh comes before the ayin. Okay, and it's not just like the Meraglim didn't lie. We talk about this idea. They didn't walk in and lie about what they saw, but they were able to see something and twist it in a way that matched their agenda. Well, the world does the same thing. Are they blatant untruths? There's a lot of untruth there, but they're basing it off of certain facts that they twist and manipulate and use. I'm not talking about Jewish space lasers, these silly things. But do the Rothschilds have a lot of money? Yes. I mean, they control the whole world and so on. No. Okay. But we can take facts. We can take realities. We can take newspapers and clippings and pieces that are all true and manipulate them and organize them and put them in a way that makes it look like we are absolutely correct in our approach to what we're doing. And that is the system, and that comes because when we reorder our world and put that head before the ayin, so then the rest of the world responds in kind. The rest of the world takes that initiative and looks at it in the same way. let's take it a step. Any questions, by the way? I have to come up with breath for a minute here. Any questions? Any questions on Zoom, anyone? Before I zoom ahead? Okay, I apologize if the jokes are really, you know, off kilter tonight, but. So, let's take this a step further. Okay, let's take it back indeed to Nasav Nishma. We talked last week about the sin of the golden calf, Chet Egel, and the path from Shival Sabatamas to Tisha B'Av, right? What we call the period of the 3 weeks. If you think about it for a minute, if you ever stop to actually calculate, it's actually not 3 weeks. 3 weeks is how many days? Mathematicians out there? 21 days. It's actually 22. This year is 23 because Tisha B'Av is pushed off a day. Although actually it started a day later. Tisha B'Av Sabatamas was also. It's 22 days. 22 days. 22 days. How many letters in Aleph Beis? 22. By the way, how many days from Rosh Hashanah through Shmini Atzeres? 22. They parallel. Okay. It's 22 days. It's 22 days of this reordering process, of this breaking down of the system. 22 days. What happened? I'm not sure if Rabbi Shapiro says this. He says something which I tried to find again. I couldn't find. And this might be my own 2 cents that I'm sticking in there. But what was the event that happened, the first event that happened on the 70th of Tammuz? Okay, the Mishnah does not say the golden calf. That's not what it says. It says, on the 70th of Tammuz, the Luchos were broken. What happened to the letters on the Luchos when Luchos were broken? The Gemara says, the letters flew off. What happens when letters fly off a paper? They lose their organization. When you put letters, or as they say, put pen to paper, right? When someone tells you, like, organize your thoughts, what do they say? Put pen to paper, put the letters down on the paper, organize, right? What tends to happen to people who are just all over the place? They have lots of ideas, but nothing organized. It's just like, it's all flying around, right? If you ever have like these cartoons of the guy who's just like brilliant, but unorganized, you see like, you know, lots of letters and formulas flying around his head, bang, 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 whatever, right? E equals MC squared, and A squared, B squared, and they're just flying around. It's unorganized. It's not, when you want to organize it, you sit down, you put a pen on paper. Rev Mordechai Gifter Zatzal used to call his pen his chavrusa. Because what? That is, it's very true. When you are studying and you want to organize your thoughts, what do? You sit down and you put pen to paper and you organize it into a system. That's how you do it. In the case of the Luchos was engraved. When the Luchos are broken, the very first step, what happens to the letters? They fly away. They lose their organization. Remember, we talked about last week this idea that when the Jewish people got the Torah, when they said Nasav and Ishma, that Torah was engraved on their hearts. In other words, the Torah, that systemization, that system of Torah, that Aleph Beis in perfect order that is reflected in the world was part and parcel of themselves. And when the Luchos broke and those letters flew away, okay, those letters flew off of the hearts of the Jewish people as well. The hearts no longer had that. You know now what became their role, like we talked about last week. You now have to get those letters back and reorganize them. And you know what, and we said the chance was to reorganize. When was the chance to fix the Chet HaEgel? When was the chance to bring Torah back into themselves? To reconnect in a very intimate, personal way and make themselves one with the Torah? Was going to the land of Israel and seeing the land of Israel for what it truly is and connecting to it in that way and making Torah themselves one through Eretz Yisrael. And what did the spies do? They organized the letters the wrong way. They put the pet, they put the paint for the ayin. Beautiful. The letters are there. The letters are there. Just put them in the right order. No. They put the pe before the ayin. They put the pe before the ayin. They put them out. And that set the tone for Tisha B'Av. That becomes Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is that failure after the three-week process and that opportunity to reorganize and that failure to organize the letters properly and instead to create a biased organization of the letters, a biased system of worldview is what emerges from those letters instead. And so Tisha B'Av is the day when the letters failed to be put in the proper order. And Hashem says, the Gemara says, and Hashem says, that you transgressed the letters of the Torah. And he said, the question was, every Aver is a transgression of the letters of the Torah. And the question was, how else should the Torah be given if not with letters? You're right. The point is that the world, which reflects the Torah, is the Torah is the vehicle through which we are able to approach and interact and be part of the world in that proper organized way. And Tisha B'Av, the day of the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, which starts with the Chet Maragim, the sin of the spies, is the day when the letters get messed up. It's not just transgressing the Torah. It's transgressing the very letters, the system that the Torah creates, the very world of connection to Hashem that the Torah is meant to create was transgressed. And so they are smitten, they are affected, they are punished with those very letters, by those letters becoming reorganized into a system that has a lot of logic to it, and or claims to have a lot of logic. It's very systemized. The Jewish people are subject through Tisha B'Av to not just random sufferings and persecution and violence and banishments and all the other, and murder and so on and so forth throughout history, but systemized persecution throughout history, because the Jewish people chose to trade the proper system of the letters of the Torah for their own, putting the pay before the ayin. And therefore Hashem says, here's the book of Eicha. You rearranged putting the pay before the ayin, so then the world is not going to accept you. The world will accept you to the extent that you stick to the Torah. When you try to move into a different system where the world will accept you, the famous early Israeli politician said, to take our rightful place among the nations of the world, okay, if that's what you want, they will never accept you. They'll never accept you because that's not your system. You're trying to create a different system. And that system will always lead to a system whereby it will be systematic persecution. And that continues in varying degrees until this day. Right? It's not just like anti-Semitism. Today it's called BDS. It's a system with lots of logic behind it, and lots of people scream, no, it's not anti-Semitism, it's anti-Zionism. It's not the same thing. Right. It's all Jews under the flag of anti-Zionism instead of anti-Semitism. So they'll give you a very logic, and you can argue with them until you're blue in the face. And you won't get through. You know why? Because they've got a system and it's very ordered and it's very, and in their mind it makes a lot of sense. Why don't you see? Because they have an agenda. They're putting their pen before the iron. But you know what? People today, do the same thing, present company excluded. People do this all the time. Why people make excuses for everything they do? Not everything, but a lot of things that they do wrong. Why don't you come to shul? It's hard for me to get up in the morning. It's not for me, you know, whatever. I just was listening to an interview with a prominent Orthodox individual who's prominent in the political world. And, they were asking him about certain things and how he identifies. And he says he has a hard time with davening. He doesn't really like davening because he doesn't really identify with this idea of asking Hashem for things. And doesn't really talk to him. Therefore, he just davens very quickly. Doesn't really, identify with davening very much. So in other words, you've created an agenda. You have a hard time dominating. You've created an agenda that, well, I don't really believe in this idea of, I was shocked because this was a probably Orthodox individual. I'm not going to drop names. Probably Orthodox individual who was very prominent in the world of politics, who was being interviewed by an Orthodox interviewer and who is, announcing, well, if you want to say I have a hard time dominating, fine, I have a hard time with dominating too. It's hard. It's hard to dominate. It's hard to concentrate while you're dominating. But to say, well, I don't really believe in this idea, or I don't really go for this idea that I'm asking Hashem for my needs. And he gives a very nice tickle there of why that's so and whatever. Some of it actually made some degree of sense. But what you've done is you've created an agenda, and therefore it's okay that I just speed through davening, and it's fine because I don't really agree with some of the notions involved over here. So you've created an agenda. You've created an agenda. Why are you speaking Lashon Hara? Well, this excuse, that really, it's for Tuelis. No one ever said Lashon Hara that wasn't for Tuelis. Anyone who ever spoke Lashon Hara ever, it was for a good reason. I'm trying to save you from this person. Well, how are you saving me? Well, I'm telling you how terrible this person is so that you shouldn't, what, marry him? I mean, like, what exactly, so everyone, no one ever talks Lashon Hara for, just sheer evil or jealousy. Everyone just says Lashon Hara because they really have my best interest in mind. When they tell me this, people will create agendas to explain away all of their behavior. So we are very quick to look at everyone else and say, well, they're taking this position because they have an agenda. It's called anti-Semitism. And that's why, because he's an anti-Semite, therefore he's created this very logical, in his mind, system. But to varying degrees, all humans are guilty, or most humans are guilty of that behavior in some way, shape, or form. So as we often say, instead of looking outwards towards everyone else's skewed value system, we need to look inwards at our own value system and see if maybe we're creating our own pay before the iron type of situation, because the same idea. Is anti-Semitism alive and well in the world? Are systematic systems of persecution that tie into Tisha B'Av so richly alive and well? Yes. have the Jewish people escape this agenda creation to avoid their responsibilities? They're still creating agendas. So,
well, can I make a comment?
You have to look inwards rather than outwards. Yes, go ahead.
This definitely applies to a political situation. Doesn't matter which political situation, everybody, but the vast majority of people have a new, they're in a news stream and they believe that news stream and anything that, or most of what comes through it, and don't believe the other news stream and reject it out of hand. And it doesn't matter if it's like liberal, conservative, whoever it is, that's what we do.
Okay. You're right. That is a tendency of people, but that's a more, I mean, you're kind of broadening the conversation here in a more political sense. You are correct, but you know, I'm not gonna get into the weeds of that right now. But there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. But I think a lot of people choose to believe or choose to go to a certain news stream because that's where they tend to identify with in the first place. You know, and so they kind of lock into that, and you know, they end up in this echo chamber very often. You know, of hearing stuff that aligns with their views. Okay, but you are correct. But I don't want to get bogged down in that right now. I want to just you know, add another layer here to this conversation, and then we'll end. That is, yeah, go ahead. Yes, for the yachid, for the individual, and for the klal. Yeah, I think so. You know, and again, I think we have to, you know, we have to be cognizant of this reality. Yeah, cognizant of this reality. That I know, am I guilty of, you know, I'm busy being upset at so-and-so because he's not being fair to me, or this is agenda is messed up, and that person, can't this person see that they're being ridiculous in their interaction with me, with my shul, with my family, with my child? This Rebbe is not treating my child. Don't they see how great my child is? Well, what's my agenda?
Yeah.
Right? In other words, let's put the shoe on the other foot and let's examine our agenda first. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not here to speak about anyone's children or anything in that sense. But very often we tend to look at everyone else and say, well, they've got an agenda, therefore they're looking this the wrong way. But no one ever looks, people have a hard time looking in the mirror and saying, what's my agenda? I was listening to a Rabbi Gershon Ribner, who's a Rabbi Shneir Kol Shalom. He's a very, I don't know exactly what his position is, but I think he's Rosh Chabur in Lakewood, but a senior Rosh Chabur in Lakewood. He had a yeshiva at one point. Very, very chashuv b'talmud chacham, and he has different, you know, hashkafa shiurim that he speaks about, and you could find them, and there's an app for it already, and so on. And he once said the following point. He said that an Adam Gadol, a great person, once told him that no parent is ever able to give an accurate description of their child. Either they are too generous, either they're too effusive, or they are too demanding in terms of their assessment of the child. But to give an accurate, objective assessment of the child, a parent is incapable of doing it. Either they're too demanding and too critical, or they are too effusive and too generous in their assessment. Sometimes both. You know, that was his observation. And I've been thinking about it for a lot, and I think there's a lot of truth to that statement. Because a child's an extension of self. And we, just like we can't really give an accurate assessment of ourselves, a child is an extension of ourselves. So we start off with an agenda. It is nigh well impossible to be objective. The Gemara says you don't see your own blemishes, right? So we have to be aware of that. Now, just to finish off with a thought over here. The Maral says, again, Rav Moshe Shapira speaking, if you look in the Toichacha, if you look in the section of the Torah in Parshas B'chukeisai that we read right a couple weeks before Shavuos, of all the terrible curses that will befall the Jewish people, Maral notes that in the blessings, everyone forgets about the blessings because they're short, right? Short and to the point. Everything will be great, everything will be wonderful, and that's it, right? The blessings start off with the letter Aleph, Im b'chukosai teilechu, Aleph, and it ends with a Saf. Oilech eschem kamimiyos, I will go with you standing up, kamimiyos, you know, standing up straight, upright. I will guide you upright. Ends with a Saf. Says the Maral, the brachas, the blessings come Aleph to Taf, order. Okay? He says, but the curses start with the letter Vav, V'haye Imloy Sishmu, and it will be if you will not listen, Vav. And it ends with a letter Hey, the very last letter of the entire section of the curses, ends with the word Biyad Moshe, in the hand of Moshe. The Moshe ends with a Hey, backwards. It goes from Vav to Hey. It goes backwards. It's out of order. In other words, the curses are what are the curses? It's any a curse is essentially the taking the blessings and in English you say turning it on its head. It's just flipping it around. It's not just like jumbling it. It's flipping it around. It's turning it backwards. Why Vav and Hey is a, I'll just share with you briefly. Some of you may identify this more than others, depending on your knowledge of Diktuk. But why Vav and Hey, Ramon Shapiro explains that there's an idea called a Vav HaMeHapeches. A Vav HaMeHapeches, for those who are not familiar like myself, means that the word Haya, for example, in Hebrew, Haya means it was in the past tense. When you put a Vav in the beginning, a conjunctive Vav, it's V'Haya, and it will be. It turns the past into the future. So the vav before a hey, the vav, the letter vav, has the capacity to flip something around from future to past. So that vav, so a vav preceding a hey is the indication, not just of out of order, it's indication of flipping something around. You take the word haya as an example, okay? Haya means it was, v'haya with the vav at the beginning, and it will be. You flipped it. You turned it totally around, 180 degrees, from past to future. So in the sense that the vav has the capacity to flip things around. And so putting a vav before the hey, which is not just out of order, it's out of order in a complete 180 flip around. So putting the vav before the hey is the indication. The klala, the curse, is the turning around of the letters out of order. In this case, putting the pay before the ayin. So when we come to Tisha B'Av, now we have a new thought to keep in mind. And that is, our job is to get the order, the letters in the right order, not on a puzzle on the floor that you have for your grandkids, you know, of the aleph base, but getting the letters in the right order in the sense of what am I supposed to be doing? What is the Torah life I'm supposed to lock into? That Torah, that sense of the letters that were engraved upon the hearts of the Jewish people that floated away on the 17th of Tammuz and that were rearranged in the wrong order on Tisha B'Av. It's our work. You know, to try and think about it, examine. And as I mentioned before, 22 days, right? 22 days of those letters parallel 22 days from Rosh Hashanah through Shmini Atzeres, okay? Because after Tisha B'Av, we start the process of rebuilding, starting with the 15th of Av, which needs its own class. I gave a class in your house a few years ago about it. But Tubav, the 15th of Av, is the process of rebuilding again, of getting up out, and then we move towards Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the process of getting the letters again in the right order. So you have 22 days to do that over there of teshuvah, of rearranging them, Rosh Hashanah through Sukkot. That's the work over there. But now it's an opportunity to reflect. During these days, it's an opportunity to reflect about that lack of order that exists within the spiritual, within the world, within our world, within our spiritual world, that lack of order of making the Torah part and parcel of our lives. That's something we can think about as we move towards Tisha B'Av. All right, I will stop here. If there are any final questions or comments, now's your big chance. Okay, everyone's speechless. Okay, so thank you all for coming. Thank you for coming. And Rabbi Heyman will, Mirtz Hashem, next Monday, give the final class on Ahavas Chinam. I told him that I wanted to call the class free love, but that has the wrong connotation these days. I can't say, sorry, not in this day and age. Ahavas Chinam, when you translate it, it's like, no, not exactly. But Ahavas Chinam in the sense of Sinas Chinam, the baseless hatred. And so to turn that to what we'll call baseless Ahavas Chinam, you know, just to love each other just because of their status as humans and as Jews. So Rabbi Heyman will talk about connection through Ahavas Chinam next week. And thank you all for coming. Have a wonderful evening. Have a good and meaningful rest of your 3 weeks, 9 days. And Tisha B'Av, we should indeed merit to be part of that rearranging of that proper ordering of the letters that we will experience with coming Mashiach, hopefully very soon. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.